Welcome back to the SBS Sports Talk Show presented by the Sports Business Society at UVA. I'm Michael Rockless along with my co-host Nick O'Connor and our producer Will Harden. Tonight we're going to talk about some NFL news, the FBI scandal and investigation into college basketball, and then March Madness is coming. This is being released on March 1st, so you know what that means. We're going to be talking exciting and best bracket pools that you can try out this year. Make sure you listen to this at 1.5 times speed. Hit it. All right, so good to be back, and let's start with some NFL news. We got a little bit of withdrawals from the NFL. So the big news this week was Blake Bortles signing a 3-year extension with the Jacksonville Jaguars, basically fully guaranteed is $20 million this year, and it's worth up to about $60 million over the next 3 years. Kind of an interesting move there. Hard to believe that Blake Bortles is going to be the guy for them moving forward. I mean, they've proved it. They put their faith in him. What were your reactions for the Jaguars putting up some real money to keep Blake Bortles in Saxonville?
Yeah, very surprised as well, just because of the wary play on Blake Bortles' part. He's never really been consistent. He hasn't proven over a long period of time that he can be that franchise quarterback. So it's interesting that the Jaguars organization was willing to put that money to his face.
Yeah, I really don't like the move. I think that with their current team, Leonard Fournette, Coughlin in the front office, Marone's a pretty solid coach, and they have just a very young, skilled defense. And some good skill players, too. They had some young guys play well, like Keelan Cole or Dede Westbrook. I think this is a shocking move. I think there's enough quarterback availability this offseason in particular, whether it be a Kirk Cousins, who we're going to talk about in a second, a Case Keenum, who the Vikings are going to make, going to let be a free agent. They're not going to tag him. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, through a trade, a Nick Foles, A.J. McCarron's a free agent. I think there was something that they could have done to really elevate the current team that they have, which is by all means outside of the quarterback position an elite team.
Yeah, maybe wide receiver they're a little
But really, I mean, defense, running game, like, it's there. Special teams, it's there. Yeah. And to give it to Blake Bortles, who, you know, yeah, he won 2 playoff games. They also won 10-3 in a home game against the Bills, where he had more rushing yards than passing yards. Played decently well against the Patriots and the Steelers, but to me if he played throughout the entire season, he's the kind of guy where in a really great situation where he has that defense, you know, in a pretty weak division, a couple quarterbacks were injured in there, Andrew Luck and Deshaun Watson in the AFC South. They still weren't, you know, a dominating team. They got the 3 seed, which was a great season for them. But to me, if you're the Jaguars, what better time is there than now to look for that quarterback to push you over the top?
Yeah, no, they definitely have all the other pieces right besides that quarterback situation to get to that Super Bowl. I mean, they've shown it in the playoffs in the regular season this past year. Just interesting move. We'll see what they do in the draft, kind of where they focus there. Hopefully maybe get a wide receiver, tight end option. We'll see. But again, yeah, I think there's just better options out there in free agency.
Yeah, speaking of better options in free agency, let's talk about Kirk Cousins, who we've hit on before after the trade with the Chiefs and the Redskins made, where the Redskins traded a third rounder and cornerback Kendall Fuller for Alex Smith, who they locked up for a 4-year extension. So Kirk Cousins obviously out there on the market, and it looks like a really interesting team is going to be a suitor for Kirk Cousins. We mentioned them a second ago in relation to Case Keenum. The Minnesota Vikings could be a big-time player for Kirk Cousins, which I think would be a very interesting move. Obviously, a big suitor is going to be the Denver Broncos, and then you have teams like the Bills, the Jets, and the Browns, who obviously aren't as ready to compete at a high level compared to Broncos, who recently won a Super Bowl, Vikings, who were in the semifinals, you know, in 2017. So what are your thoughts on particularly the Vikings making a move into potentially getting Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, I think Vikings, right, going in a different direction than the Jaguars organization. I think they realize that their time is now. Again, they have all the other pieces. They have the defense. They have the wide receivers. Dalvin Cook coming back. You know, that was a huge blow this season. They have all those pieces. And they realize that, right? You know, you want to be in, as an organization, you want to be playing for a win now. You don't want to be looking, we'll be good 5 years. We'll go for a QB then. You have the situation, you have the team right now to win. And I think that they're going to go ahead and make a high bid for Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, I could definitely see it. I mean, it looks like they're circling him. You know, they brought in Bradford with the trade with the Eagles, Sam Bradford. And he played well when he was there, but they ultimately didn't get to the playoffs last year, and he got hurt this year. And then it looks like they found some, you know, hidden gold with Case Keenum, but of course his offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur has since left and is now the coach for the New York Giants. So yeah, I mean, if they were to bring in Kirk Cousins, who, you know, of all these guys available, you know, assuming they're not going to trade another first round pick to the Eagles for Nick Foles, of all these guys available, Kirk Cousins slides into that team, and man, is that a scary good team with Kirk Cousins. I mean, you would think, as well as Case Keenum played last year, and they were right on the doorstep of a Super Bowl, besides the fact that they lost, you know, 38-7 in the NFC Championship game. I mean, really, they were right there. Kirk Cousins puts you right there again next year with, as we said, a really well-built team. And then, of course, the Denver Broncos are going to be in there making a strong play for Kirk Cousins as well. They have Simeon and Osweiler and Paxton Lynch. Obviously, at this point, those guys are not going to be getting it done, you know, to the level of John Elway's, you know, what he's expecting. So look for them to be another really competitive team that's going to make a go at Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, I would really like him to go to the Broncos. I think that would make the AFC a lot more competitive.
Get him out of the NFC.
Get him out of the NFC. I think that's what you're saying. As a Saints fan, Eagles fan, you know, you just don't want more competitive teams. I mean, there's so many dangerous teams in the NFC. At any point in time, Seahawks, Falcons could turn around, Panthers, a lot of teams in the NFC South, Packers, Aaron Rodgers.
Saints, Saints, Eagles, Cal. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of teams. And it's really what it comes down to is, like, if Kirk Cousins were to go to the Arizona Cardinals, I don't think that's worrisome. That team is just not quite as ready. But for him to go to a team that just made the NFC Championship game with Case Keenum, that becomes really scary and a really, really quality team that has a chance to, you know, of course, get to the Super Bowl next season. So get out of the NFC, go to Denver.
If he's going to Denver, I think, right, the preseason matchup that everyone's going to be looking forward to is that Broncos versus Patriots matchup. Obviously, Steelers in that mix, of course. But again, I feel like those were going to be the two favorite teams to make the AFC Championship, and I think it would just be a very competitive season.
Yeah, I think the Broncos getting Kirk Cousins, it obviously is not at the level of Peyton Manning when they brought him in from the Indianapolis after he got released there. But I do agree. I think a lot of the core talent of that team from their Super Bowl run is intact. You have some wide receivers, Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders. You still have Von Miller. You still have a very good secondary, even if they release Aqib Talib this season. So, I mean, that team would all of a sudden become a real player in the AFC West and in the AFC as a whole. So that's kind of looking forward to. I guess free agency starts in about 2 weeks here. So we'll see if Kirk Cousins gets signed quickly. You want to add one more thing?
Yeah, I was going to say, do you think Kirk Cousins is that QB that you wanted to invest in? Because obviously last season, you know, good season, but not great season. You know, not maybe perhaps that franchise quarterback that you're looking for in terms of stats last season.
Yeah, I don't think Kirk Cousins is a guy that I want, as you know, I'm not going to expect him to do the kinds of things that I expect Aaron Rodgers to do or Ben Roethlisberger or Tom Brady to do. I don't think he's carrying a mediocre team to a great record. Saw it with the Redskins last couple years. They had some success, but the last 2 years, I think they were a pretty middling team. But I do want Kirk Cousins to be, if I'm a team that has that set foundation already and I can bring Kirk Cousins in to take me to the next level, I think there's a lot of reasons to believe that he can be that guy. So for the Broncos and Vikings specifically, he is a guy that is capable, in my opinion, of putting an already elite team, or if Jacksonville wanted Kirk Cousins, similar sense, to put them in the conversation with these other elite teams in the NFL. I think if he goes to the Jets, the Bills, the Browns, the Cardinals, one of these teams that are more in a rebuilding stage, yes, they have that stability at quarterback, but it will definitely take them a longer period of time to reach a level that the Vikings and Broncos would be at by adding Kirk Cousins from day one.
And those teams would especially be hoping that Kirk Cousins, you know, elevates his level. Is that guy that can lead them? And you just don't know that yet.
Yeah, I would tend to think he's not a guy that I want to rely on if the rest of my team isn't great. But again, you know, the Browns have a lot of draft capital. If they were to get Kirk Cousins, you can spend those trade down again, but you could spend those first round picks to really build around him. And you could probably pretty quickly put a team around him. But I think, you know, for Kirk Cousins, he's going to get a ton of money. Very unique situation with a quarterback this good, being an unrestricted free agent, most likely going to be unrestricted, assuming the Redskins don't tag him. I think there's a great opportunity for him to look at these really good teams, foundations of these teams, and go there and become an immediate playoff and potentially Super Bowl contender. All right, so now we finished our football talk for the week, which is sad, but we'll get back to it when we cover free agency, which is opening up, as I said, in a couple of weeks. So now we're going to talk about, obviously, the big news in college basketball that hit over the weekend, the FBI scandal. They released some documents. A lot of it was relatively nonsense. I mean, saying that players from, you know, obviously Malcolm Brogdon was one of the names, or, you know, the Miles Bridges on Michigan State, or Wendell Carter on Duke, you know, if they got $60 allegedly in a meal from an agent, not a big deal. What is a big deal, though, is the investigation as a whole. It doesn't seem like it's over. And of course, the big news was Arizona with a wiretap on their coach, Sean Miller, who's been an excellent coach for years, dating back to when he was at Xavier, hasn't broken through to the Final Four yet. But of course, on the wiretap, he was listened to, you know, people heard him saying, you know, are we going to get the $100,000 to sign DeAndre Ayton, who is one of the top three recruits in this year's class? And it doesn't look like that he's ever going to coach college basketball again. I mean, it's a shocking revelation. I don't know what your takeaways were from that specific Sean Miller incident. That seems to be by far the biggest blow that's come out of this scandal so far.
Yeah, I think LeBron put it really well. He had a quote saying,
just, wow, Nick is about to praise LeBron. Know, everyone, get your recording devices
very
out.
Rare, very rare. But I think he put it really well in the sense that just the NCAA system is broken. And it's just systematically broken. It has been for some time. I think when you don't have the option where you can't go to the NBA, I think it just incentivizes players, especially, you know, if you're coming from a poor background, to, you know, engage in taking money and going through that process. And especially for teams and college teams, right, where they can have this option to, you know, pay players or give them, you know, meals or give them other perks to join their team. I just think this it goes back to where the system is broken. And I think the way to fix that would just be getting rid of that 1 year rule and just allowing players go right to the NBA if they want to.
Yeah, I think so. And it's just terrible that, you know, that these play, and it's weird. It's a weird incentive structure where if you're a coach, it pays you more money to cheat and be good and have the success, because Sean Miller, even if he gets fired through this scandal, he's still going to come out making several million dollars. And if you're DeAndre Ayton, it's like you're one and done no matter what. Why not get $100,000 if, you know, his family needs it, or if, even if they don't need it, why not get $100,000, play? Odds are they're not going to catch you in the middle of the season, which they have this year, but of course he's still playing, which we can talk about in a second. But, you know, you get $100,000 as a college kid, you get some money up front, and then, you know, you go to the NBA and make your millions there. It's just the incentive structure's off, and for players, you know, being forced since the mid-2000s to go to college, or at least be 1 year removed from high school, you know, this is, you know, kind of the not, you know, ridiculous result to have happened, is all these top line recruits getting all this money, or at least allegedly it's happening somewhere. So it's just kind of a sad thing to see. And it's weird to see the FBI getting involved. And, you know, this month that's coming up, March, is, you know, the holy grail of the college basketball world. You know, it's a great month to celebrate how, you know, fantastic the sport is. And it's kind of disappointing to see it go down this path. And with some people who just didn't quite have that integrity in the game.
Yeah, no, I think where we've seen, right, a lot of these instances of colleges paying players or incentivizing players to come to their school with other perks, we've seen it in the two sports of basketball and football, especially in the last 10, 15 years since that rule was implemented. And, right, these are the two sports that don't allow players to go straight to professional. And I think that's just the problem. I think that's where it comes down to. LeBron has some good ideas of expanding the G League to try to incorporate and allow these players to be able to make some money right out of high school. But, you know, going back specifically to the Arizona situation, I think it's sad just that coaches are willing to risk their integrity, you know, right, just to make the money.
Yeah, and he had to have known he was going to get caught. I mean, it, just by saying those words, wiretapped or not, if he did that act, I mean, career's over. He's going to be blacklisted.
You think he really knew he was going to get caught?
I think
this has happened. I don't think it's just in the Arizona case. I think this has happened over multiple schools. I think it's happened over multiple years. I think there has been instances, maybe not as grand as this, but I'm sure there has been instances across schools that, you know, similar to this.
Well, let me rephrase. I think ever since the, you know, FBI investigation, I guess they announced in August, I mean, I think he's had to have known that it was coming for him, which maybe explains some of Arizona's underperformance this season. But the main point is he knows he was drastically cheating and putting his career on the line if he were to ever get caught in the act of doing this, which is, you know, it's sad to see someone who's a very good coach or seems like a very good coach in college basketball to do that. You know, the interesting thing about the one and done is I think it potentially protects a lot of kids who might want to go to the NBA out of high school, whether they think they don't want to go to college or they need the money or for whatever reason. The one and done can protect kids who, you know, are probably better off going to school and are going to flame out in the NBA. I think you could probably look back at all these high school draft picks and see how many of them flamed out and where they are today without that structure of college. But at the same time, there are certain players that, you know, DeAndre Ayton, for example, where he should have just, you know, physically, the NBA would have had him, even if he wasn't a huge contributor this year. I mean, obviously, he has the raw tools to be a superstar in the league. Like, there are certain players where, and I don't know how they're going to do this, or is there going to be some sort of, you know, committee that rules whether you can go to the NBA or not, or are you just going to make it free range? You know, if you go to the NBA, like, if you want to go, you can go. And if you don't get drafted, maybe you can go to college late. I don't know how they're going to solve it, but it's definitely something amid these issues that they're going to have to look at and come out with a solution that's better than what's going on right now.
Yeah, no, I think we've talked about this before, how, you know, baseball seems to have a really good system where, you know, if you can go to the MLB, you know, if you want to, but if you're not, then you got to be committed to the team and to the school. And I kind of like that because you develop, you know, team chemistry, you develop, you know, a team where the fans can root for multiple years. You're not just having, you know, guys coming for 1 year then leaving. You know, you build up this legacy, and I really like that. You know, for me, I just think it comes down to, because originally the NCAA implemented this 1 year policy because they wanted students to become student athletes. Mm-hmm. And that was the whole reasoning. But, you know, really when these kids are, you know, they're not going to school.
Yeah.
You know
well, I mean? It's really that the NBA is the one implementing the rule because they're the one NBA, saying we want, you know, kids coming into the league that have a little bit more experience.
Mm-hmm. And, but I think a big proponent was, oh, they're also being student athletes. Yeah. They're going to school. But these kids aren't really going to school.
Right.
And we know this. When we see basketball players, they're not really in the class. I'm not implicating UVA. I'm not saying go to classes, but let's just say they're not being full-time students.
Any student-athlete has it's a very difficult thing is to be a full-time student on the same level as a regular student.
It is.
That's an obvious thing.
Yes, yeah.
All right, so that'll kind of do it for us. We're going to transition into the better side of college basketball, which is the things actually happening on the court. Obviously, the regular season for most conferences end this week. Some of them have ended already, but the Power Five, I think most of their conference tournaments start next week. So let's talk about some of the big conference tournaments here. What's one thing that you're looking out for in any of these big conferences?
Yeah, one conference I'm really looking forward to is the Big Ten. I think they have two really power teams with Michigan State and Purdue. It'll be interesting to see. I think, you know, obviously the team who wins will probably get that number one seed. But also you have a ton of solid teams like Ohio State, Michigan, you know, even Penn State that could make a run in this tournament and increase their seed. So I just think you have a lot of interesting teams here, and we'll see kind of how they play out in this tournament.
Yeah, I think for the first time ever, UVA fans should be rooting for Michigan State in this conference tournament. They're, for some reason, I don't know, the bracketology doesn't seem to have them as a one seed currently. They might be right on the cusp as a two seed. Maybe they've broken through. But if they do win this conference tournament, they'll definitely be in line for a one seed because you know that a Xavier or Villanova, who we'll talk about in a second, one of those teams has to lose in their conference tournament. So if you're UVA and you don't want to see Michigan State you know, shadowing over you in your region, let's just root for them to win their conference tournament. And like you hit on, you have some bubble teams like a Penn State, Nebraska, who will be playing for their two football schools, really. See them, you know, trying to earn a bid on the hard court. And then you have Michigan, Ohio State, some of the traditional powers in that conference, too, are going to be in the tournament, see how they perform.
Yeah, no, I'm really, because I'm not so skeptical, but I just, Purdue hasn't proven it to me that they can be that power team. So I think this tournament, especially if they were able to win this tournament, you know, it would really increase my confidence in them going into this tournament. But right now, going to March Madness, I'm not quite sure if Purdue just has that resume and has that, you know, strength of schedule, perhaps, and all those quality wins to really elevate them. What about you? What do you think is some interesting picks or some interesting conferences that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, so I'm looking at, not in a home or away, but I'm looking at the ACC tournament, not for the Hoos, but for a particular team in the ACC that needs an auto bid to make the tournament. Bonzi Colson is coming back this week. He'll play in his first game. Wednesday night. And he'll play against UVA on Saturday as well. This is a team that reached, I believe, as high as the top five, maybe even third, early on in the season when he was healthy. They've had a slew of injuries. He'll be back. I think it would be really interesting to see a Notre Dame come in with Bonzi Colson, who is a preseason All-American, I believe, you know, one of the top 5 or 10 players in the country. He comes back. Do they have it in them to make a run and get an auto bid from the ACC, you know, and that would be taking a spot of a bubble team right now because Notre Dame surely isn't in the field. But I think they have the talent to go on a little run here and, you know, beat, you know, if they need to, a UNC, a Duke, a UVA, and get all the way through, and that's their chance to get in.
Yeah, I think it's also interesting is if they don't win the tournament, you know, right, they have Coleman, they have the talent level of this good team, you know what I mean? It would be tragic if they weren't able to make the tournament.
Yeah, I'm not a huge Notre Dame, I'm not a big Bonzi Colson fan. They slaughtered UVA in the ACC Conference Tournament, so I wouldn't call it a tragedy for me, but again, this is a team that definitely is a top 64, top, you know, however many at-large bids are. They're definitely of that caliber. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously the unfortunate circumstance of the injuries that they had. But I think that's a really interesting thing to look at. I would think that if they were to make a run and win the ACC tournament, that they might be the worst regular season Power 5 team, at least in recent memory, to come in and steal an auto bid. I think that'll be something to look out for. Because, like I said, I think they have the talent to do it. And it would be something really interesting to follow. And if they make it far, I'm sure a lot of bubble teams will be keeping a close eye on them.
Mm-hmm. In terms of ACC, though, as a whole, who is your favorite, you know, to win this tournament?
UVA.
UVA.
Yeah, I like UVA. The bracket will shake out how it shakes out. They obviously have the double bye, the number one seed. I'd love to see it come down to UVA and Duke. I think those are the two best teams by far. I think it would mean a lot for UVA to replicate what they did back in, I believe, 2013 when they beat Duke in the conference championship there. But I think UVA, simply for the fact that I think they're going to be the most solid team, at least of winning the early round games when they have to play a Florida State or a Miami. I trust UVA to get to the final. And I don't know if I trust Duke or UNC as much to be able to win those earlier games in the tournament. So I like UVA. I think it'll be, I wouldn't give them a greater than 50% chance, mm-hmm. but I like the Hoos to come through and at least give a positive showing in the ACC tournament. And hopefully if they're able to sustain a strong week this week, play Thursday night at Louisville and then Saturday at home for against Notre Dame, now retooled Notre Dame, to lock up that number one overall seed.
Yeah, no, for sure. Of any team, they've shown the consistency that they can do it week in, win out, week out. It'll just be interesting to see, you know, how UNC and how these Duke teams are able to, you know, play in this tournament. Because I think there's a lot of momentum, you know, if you're able to do really well in these conference tournaments. Going into March Madness is a big confidence booster. So if UNC is able to get to those finals, maybe even win those finals, again, very, very dangerous teams in March Madness.
Yeah, you actually bring up an interesting point. I wonder how much of a momentum boost it is to win your conference tournament. That's something to look at, maybe in a SBS post. All right, well, let's get you into the fold here. Which conference tournament are you looking forward to the most?
So I'm really looking forward to the Big East tournament. Currently, Xavier is in the position to get the number one seed in that conference tournament with Villanova right behind them. So I think if either one of those teams ends up winning their tournament up in Madison Square Garden, I would like to think that they would probably get a one seed heading in the NCAA tournament. I think especially if the matchup in the championship is Xavier and Villanova, I think that'd be a great game. I just remember back in the day, some Kemba Walker magic in MSG, so I think we'd get a little bit more of that out of these two teams.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that one, too. Two very quality teams. Both of them will probably get top two seeds. One of them, like you said, the winner will probably get a one seed. So I think that is something really to look out for. You know, pretty interesting conference there. You have Creighton, Seton Hall, Butler. Those are all tournament teams. Mm-hmm. So you can get some really good games out of the Big East tournament with, obviously, Xavier, Villanova. Outside of a Duke, UVA, maybe Michigan State, Purdue, that could be the marquee matchup of conference championship weekend.
Yeah, a lot of those teams, I think, are very dangerous also because they usually have, you know, those older players, more experienced, older people. So I think especially when it comes tournament time, those teams are especially dangerous.
Yeah. All right, cool. So now we are going to move forward into, we're not going to call it a hypothetical question today, but we're gonna try and help everyone out. I think the way that everyone does their bracket pools is obviously for the casual fan, it makes the most sense. You go through ESPN or whatever website and you click, you know, who do I think is going to win this game? And you go through and there's a point system where, you know, every round, a one game winning, getting the game correct is worth double points. That's not the best way to do it. If you get the champion right, if you're in a big pool, you got to get the champion right because someone is, and you have to get a bunch of the middling stuff right. There are way more fun ways to do this. So we're going to look at a couple of them. Will is going to introduce the topics to us. We'll talk about the pros and cons and what we think would be the most fun. So hopefully if you're listening to this, you're going to get persuaded to not do your traditional bracket pool and instead run a bracket pool that's a little bit more exciting and engaging and a little bit more, takes a little bit more skill.
Yeah. Something different.
Something different. You're, you know, and you can still, no one's preventing you from filling out a bracket and throwing it out there in a different pool. But I think these would be the most engaging, fun ways to follow March Madness this season. All right, Will, so you're going to hit us with a couple of these, and we'll tease them out.
So the first method is the auction method, and this is a popular method for picking NFL games, but it translates well to March Madness. So basically, each participant would get a set amount of hypothetical money, and then with this money, you would go through each team in the bracket, starting with 1 seeds all the way through 16 seeds, and you would everybody would have a chance to bid on the team, and the highest bidder would ultimately get that pick.
Yeah, and so you would get that pick, and the scoring system would be what? Like, how would you do the scoring system?
I mean, there are probably a couple different ways you could do it. It'd probably just be easiest to do the traditional method where you get 1 point for the first round, 2 points, second round, just all the way through.
Okay. I know one of the things we discussed with the auction method was dividing every single game into a money back. So there's 63 games in the tournament, and you would say getting a win in the round of 32 is worth 1% of the total money in the pool, and every game you're getting, someone's winning money based on who they have. Mm-hmm. So what are your initial thoughts on running an auction and everyone, you know, bidding their money to get their teams that they want?
Yeah, I really like this. It's something I actually haven't heard before. So I think this would be just a very interesting way to go about it. I think a lot of the pros are just the different approaches you can take to going about the auction, right? So if you want to go really heavy on the 1-2, maybe only get 2 or 3 teams, right? You're banking on them to win, but let's say they get upset, you're kind of screwed. Or you could go the strategy of, I'm going to get a bunch of middling teams, 4, 5, and 6 seeds to get the, you know, the wins in the beginning, and, you know, hopefully that can carry you. So just, I think it's interesting to see the different draft strategies and different auction strategies that you can go about this.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the most exciting part about this is you can probably break it down into, you know, what are the most valuable strategies? Do I want to front load it and, you know, say if I get the champion right, that's worth, you know, 25% of the pool. Am I really just going to go all in on, you know, a team that I think is going to do that? Or do I want to really diversify myself, get a bunch of the middling or lower seeded teams and try and win my money early and hope for upsets? And that's like a low risk type of strategy. And I think it really comes into play. Like anytime there's an auction, you know, the big unknown is if I'm in an auction, I'm competing against 7 other people. So your personal value of a team relative to the scoring system becomes the deciding factor in who ultimately succeeds. And that's where it becomes a great combination of skill and just basically trying to value a team to a way that makes sense in this kind of format.
Yeah, I think definitely just the pre-draft picking would be obviously such an exciting part, right? You're competing against your friends, you're bidding as much money, doing different strategies.
You would fall in love with the teams you pick in the
auction.
Exactly,
right? You're
in love with them.
You'd be rooting for these teams nonstop. I just think it would create a lot more excitement. I kind of like the payout system where you get a percentage. Every single time you get a win, you get a percentage of those winnings, whatever that percent is. I think that's kind of cool just because you're kind of guaranteed some money, but you're kind of hedging your bet a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. I think that makes the most sense. So let's talk about what would be the ideal structure in terms of people. I think we talked about this. I think we would probably want a maximum or probably a perfect number for this would be 8 people. Mm-hmm. That means on average, it may not shake out this way depending on people's preferences and bidding, but on average, you would have, everyone would have a 1 or a 2 seed. I think if you had somewhere like 16 people and in theory, the 16th team is getting the worst 4 seed, I think that's just a lot less fun. I think you want everyone to have a team or teams that are capable of at least making it to the Final Four. So you're engaged as you go on, which I think is really a problem with the current format, is that if your champion gets eliminated in round two, you have no chance of winning, and why do you even care? So I think if you have everyone has multiple teams they care about, you know, if you were to say there's eight people in this league, probably five or six people will be represented with Elite Eight teams, and all along the way, everyone's winning some money. I think that makes it the most exciting.
Yeah, I definitely think that the less people, the better for this. I think you're just, right, you don't want, you know, if there's 16 people, you don't want all your teams getting eliminated in the second round by chance, and then it's just not fun.
Right.
So I think that's a cool way to do it. I also think, though, right, you know, not everyone might not have the same amount of teams. You know, if one person wants to go, again, heavy on the first 1-2 seed or something like that, there's just a lot of different strategies to go about it.
Yeah, I agree, too, with that. So the other thing I wanted to mention with this before we move on into our next one is I think there is a universe, a group out there where you could set a no limit on the auction, and the money that you bid is the money in the pool. So that way it becomes people's personal like risk preferences. It's not like a $20 buy-in to get 100 points in the auction. It's like you're putting up real money for these teams, and you can do the same scoring system. So you could have some people weighted very heavily with much more risk, and people weighted much, you know, smaller with much less risk, and play it out that way. I think that would be another wrinkle to it. I would think for most, the simpler way to do it would be everyone has the same number of points. You can have more teams or less teams, but ultimately the spending will be the same, and no one has an inherent advantage in how much money they've spent.
Yeah, I think that different strategy definitely reflects, you know, people's different betting strategies. You know, right, if someone's conservative, they're not going to put up that much risk. So just be a little different. Obviously, you could have someone, though, that wants to spend a ton of money, get those, you know, 1-2 seeds, but again, is, you know, having this huge risk.
Right. Okay, let's move on into the next one, Will.
Yeah, the next one is the round time seed method. And so I think the easiest way to explain this is just through an example. So we'll say we want to pick an 8 seed in the first round. First round is usually worth 1 point, so you get 8 points. You pick the 8 seed again if they win. You pick the 8 seed again in the second round. Second round is usually worth 2 points. Then you get 16 points if they won. And then if the third round, you continue to pick the 8 seed. 4 points is typically the worth of the third round. So therefore, if the 8 seed wins, you get 32 points.
Yeah, so I think the bottom line for this, that's a good job explaining it, Will. The bottom line for this one is picking lower seeded teams and getting those correct is worth a lot more than going chalk and getting those correct. So if you were to pick, you know, the underdog, as Will said, you know, a 12 seed over a 5, you get 12 for the 12 seed winning the game, but you still get 5 points for the 5 seed winning the game. So there's a big difference there. So it incentivizes those lower picks, but it does enforce a little bit of strategy early on and later on in the tournament. So what are your thoughts on this method?
Yeah, definitely, because right, if you're going to pick those underdog teams, you know, they might win that first round game, but they're probably not likely to win that second, third, or fourth round games, and then you're just losing all you know, a bunch of points in those later rounds. So it'd be interesting. You'd have to do the calculation in the sense, you know, would it be worth you know, picking a 1 seed and just picking chalk the rest of the time. I would think that, you know, in this strategy would, you know, enforce, or not enforce, but incentivize people to pick underdogs.
Yeah.
So, right, you would get just a bunch of wild choices, which I kind of like. So you just get a bunch of brackets, right, with, you know, 12 and 13 seeds, perhaps making the third or fourth round or something like that. So I think that would be cool because you'd definitely see a big variance in the brackets.
Yeah, I think the strategy with this one would be you'd want to pick you would want to pick against the higher seeded teams that you don't think have a chance to go very far. So if there's a 3 seed that you're like, this team isn't getting to the Elite Eight, pick against them in the first round, pick against them in the second round, if you have to, and then that way you can pick up a lot of those points and not risk the danger of losing out if they were to win at all. Whereas if you were to pick an 8 seed, in Will's example, you know, by the second round, you're picking against the number 1 seed. If that number 1 seed were to go on and win the tournament and someone else has that, you know, they're scooping up all those points that you've just left on the table because you wanted to, you know, get the multiplier points. So I think that would be the strategy I'd go about, is picking the teams against the teams that I think didn't have a chance to go very far and picking the lower seeds there. But still, ultimately, when it gets down to it, you got to pick the teams you think are going to win, because that's where, you know, the most points are going to be.
Yeah, and then obviously, right, you know, if you have someone who's really confident perhaps in a 6, 7, or 8 seed and picks them to go to the Final Four, that can really pay dividends.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, you're risking losing out on a bunch of points, but again, let's say you have a Kentucky or, you know, a perhaps a team that struggled in the regular season but you think has promise in the tournament, you know, that could really pay off.
Yeah, I agree. All right, Will, hit us with the last one we're going to talk about tonight.
So the final one is the survivor pool method, and I actually misspoke earlier. This is the one that's common for picking NFL games. The auction is a way to do the fantasy football draft. But so for survivor pool, basically on the first round of games, you would pick two teams to win. If both your teams win, you stay alive. If either your team loses, you're out. You do have a chance to buy back in. And then from the second round on, you only pick one team, but you can't pick teams that you've already picked before. So then you have to be strategic with your picks and make sure you pick someone who you're confident with then, but that you think could lose further down the line.
Yeah, and so the important thing to note with this method is you're picking, so there's, you know, the same round of the tournament is over two different days, so you're picking two teams on Thursday, two teams on Friday, and then one team Saturday, one team Sunday, and then when you pick up the next week, the Sweet 16, you're one team, one team, one team, one team. I've heard people do this one before, and like Will said, in this method, you would allow people to buy back in that entire first weekend. I think this one would be extremely exciting and obviously very strategic as well.
Yeah, just because there's so few games that you're actually caring about. You know, you're not caring about all 64 teams in the beginning rounds. You're just focusing on two games and then one game going after that. So I just think it would be, again, you'd be really nerve-wracking and exciting, you know, every single round to, you know, pick new teams and go about it. It would be interesting, right? Because, you know, you don't want to blow those, you know, two seeds in the first round.
Right, exactly. You couldn't,
You couldn't. So it would just be kind of interesting, the strategies to go about this.
Yeah, I agree. I think the big thing here is you have to play to outlast everyone in your pool. And this one, unlike the auction one, is very scalable. You could do this with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And you're, you know, the objective is to outlast people. So, you know, you have to look down the line and say, okay, obviously these one seeds are all going to win in the first round. But I also think the one seeds are the most likely teams to win when it comes to the Sweet 16 and Elite 8. I have to save them for then. So all of a sudden, you know, especially when you're picking two teams the first 2 days of the tournament, you're knocking out, you know, you're probably some four seeds, maybe a five seed if you really like it. But you're knocking out, you know, some quality teams. And then as you move on into the round of 32 Sweet 16, you're really whittling down the teams you get, because the more, if you lose, you lose. But if you get it correct, that only dilutes the amount of teams you have to choose from. So you have to make sure that you're not stuck choosing, you know, call it, you know, an 11 seed over a two seed in the Sweet 16.
Yeah. It's almost more nerve-wracking in the beginning rounds, because, right, you have to pick these 6-7 seeds or 5-6 seeds, whatever it is,
right,
in the beginning rounds, and those aren't certain matchups.
Right.
And so very risky matchups in the first round, so it'd be interesting to see if you went to perhaps go, you know, with a second or third seed, thinking that they're going to win those first or second round matchups, but perhaps couldn't win those later round matchups.
Yeah, but again, you also don't want to pigeonhole yourself into saying, oh, I've left my, the only option I have is picking this 11 seed, who obviously you wouldn't have picked early on, but now they're in the Sweet 16 and they're playing the number 2 seed, and now I have to pick them because I don't have other options. Because, you know, when you get down to it, to the Sweet 16, there's not that many games per day. There's only 4 games each day, so your window of teams gets very, very limited very quickly. So you have to make sure you have the teams you need available, and I think there's a potential for you, if you keep getting them right, you could get shut out by the time you get to the Final Four. But I do think it's very, very hard to get even to the Final Four. So that might be where the winner comes in. But again, just a very interesting bracket pool.
Yeah, and it's definitely, right, a little bit different for the auction, right? I think this, the more people, the better, right?
Right.
You just want a ton of people.
Yeah, get the pool up, the winnings up.
Yeah, winnings up. And then again, right, when you get to those latter rounds, you know, you'll have people left. You know,
right.
You'll have everyone knocked out. So I think it'd be really cool. And I think, you know, Mike and I are probably going to be trying some of these different strategies during this year's March Madness. And we'll let you know how those go. You know, if you guys found any of these interesting, you should go ahead and implement them.
Yeah. Will, which one do you like? If you had to institute one, what would you do?
I would probably just do auction, because I think that'd be the most fun.
So you'd get a group of 8 that you like, and you'd auction it out. I think with a group of 8, auction's really good. If you want to go for the big group, I'd probably lean towards the eliminator pool. You're not picking at all the games like you would be in the round time seed method, but still, I think it's just a little bit more strategic and a little bit more fun. So that's kind of where I lean. What are you thinking?
Yeah, no, I think I'm the similar thoughts. You know, auction with, you know, fewer people, eliminator challenge with the more people. But yeah, no, I think that's pretty much it for today. If you guys have any interesting ideas that you guys have done in the past or you have heard, send them in. We would love to hear them, and perhaps we'll try them out and let you know how it goes.
Yep, sounds good. Thanks for listening, guys.